When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, it's Jim Walker, and you're listening to the $2 me. This is Jim Walker, and you're listening to the $2 late. God. Hi, this is Jim Walker, and you're listening to the $2 late fee podcast.
You know those guys who think they know everything about a movie without having to go on the internet to look it up? That's us, but maybe only for the years 1981 through mid-1989.
No, I'd say late 1978 through early 1992. Either way, we know movies, and even more specifically, we know soundtracks from those movies.
Yeah, this is $2 Late Fee with Zach and Dustin.
This is the podcast where we pick a movie and soundtrack from our youth that we loved and see if it still holds up today.
All in the spirit of positivity and togetherness. Thanks for listening. On to the show.
I guess I should have known from the beginning it was going to be one of those days.
His name is...
Jerry Mitchell.
Hi, Jerry.
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 Hi, I'm Jerry Mitchell. I'm with the school paper.
He just met the new kid in school.
The guy's the closest thing to Charlie Manson ever seen at Weaver.
Now...
We're going to have a fight today after school.
He's got 6 hours to get out of it.
It's been quite a morning, Jerry.
You can say that again.
Jerry's got a lot on his mind.
10 seconds.
But he's not thinking about math or English.
5 seconds.
Because at 3 o'clock, he's gonna make history.
There isn't gonna be any fight today!
I want you to understand something, Jerry. I don't like people knowing about me. In fact, I don't like it when anyone knows about me. So you can take that paper of yours and wipe off your dick with it.
That was that from line. Trump's press conference this morning.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is how he treats his reporters. Welcome to $2 Late Fee, everybody.
Right.
It's the after-school special edition of $2 Late Fee.
Hey, wipe your dick off with it, Jerry. What a good quote.
Hey, Dustin, how
quote.
You doing?
It was good.
This is our second episode recording remotely, and I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I feel great about it. You know, we're still in a pandemic. Obviously, that's not good, but... I got some groceries yesterday, so that's exciting. And how are you?
I'm good. You know, brave new world, and we're just surviving. And I think this episode is kind of perfect and appropriate for what's going on today, because it's not about, it's about dealing with the shit that you got going on in your life and what's the best way to handle it. And you know, it, whether it be a bully or a pandemic or a president.
It won't matter, right?
It won't matter.
It won't matter.
Oh, man. I tell you
Movie
what, I have had that song in my head ever since, like, for the past several weeks. Well, it pretty much always is. But now, you know, just singing it on a regular basis. And today we'll be talking about that song. But before we get into any of that, we should probably tell everybody what movie we're going to be talking about and yada, 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 and introduce our special guest.
Sure.
So welcome to $2 Late Fee and with Zach and Dustin. And today we are talking about the 1987 cult classic 3 o'clock High and the song Something to Remember Me by Jim Walker, a good friend of the show. And we'll get into that later as well. But first, before we get into any of that, Dustin and I, we do this show solo, well, together, but occasionally...
Together Alone. Hashtag Together Alone.
That's actually a great song title. Yep. But then occasionally, more to the point, once we had a guest on our show, your awesome brother, Lance, and we talked about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And so we thought, well, you know what? Let's do this one more time. And we've got a special guest with us today. He is a public speaker and an author of a book series called What 80s Pop Culture Teaches Us About Today's Workplace. And his name is Chris Clues. Chris, welcome to $2 Late Fee.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited. I think since the first time that we connected, I believe on Instagram, when you guys were kind of just getting started, and I've wanted to be on the show ever since. So this is awesome for me.
Right on.
Oh, welcome. And by the way, when you were talking about the pandemic and everything else, two nights ago, I watched one of my favorite movies, which is not an 80s movie, when we want to talk about a great quote. Okay, so the scariest environment imaginable. Thanks. That's all you got to say. Scariest environment imaginable. And it was, of course, Armageddon. So
that's one of your favorite movies.
Armageddon.
I love it. I think it's so much fun.
With,
I don't know.
With Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck, that Armageddon?
Oh, yeah. Owen Wilson and Steve
Animal
Buscemi
crackers and being dancing across Liv Tyler's arm?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You want it? And, okay, I'm going to blow your mind. I'm going to tell you right now that I've never seen Armageddon from beginning to end.
Just fantastic dialogue, fun movie. Really, actually, surprisingly great cast. I mean, if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Willis, Owen Wilson, Michael Clark Duncan.
That was the peak of Michael Bay, and just back then, that thing was huge. It was huge.
Yeah. But yeah, it was great. Sorry to digress.
It was a huge movie.
No,
it's not in the 80s, but I suppose we can talk about it.
And Chris, get used to digressions, because whether it's me or Dustin, that's all we do. And that's what makes our show so damn good, I think. So.
Well, I talk about in my books, I always have digression alerts in my books because I do the same thing.
Speaking of books, nice segue, right?
Wait a minute. I just want to say, just to go back to Armageddon for a minute. So Armageddon is in like your top five movies of all time?
No, it's not.
Okay.
But if I just want something fun to enjoy and I don't want to think a whole lot and I want to be entertained and I want to laugh, great.
So it didn't make you feel like end of the world. It felt appropriate to you as opposed to like, oh, man, like we're all going to die.
No, I'm a really positive person, so I'm just kind of, I go with the flow with a lot of stuff.
What's the song? I'm not going to close my eyes.
Oh, I don't want to close. Don't want to fall asleep because I miss you, babe. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, come on. That song was huge back then. I remember wanting to slow dance to it, but not having someone to slow dance with.
Why is that always a theme for you? I don't understand.
Couples,
you didn't love yourself enough.
I do a couple.
I did not. I did not have self love back in the day.
Because Jackie Lee was around, you didn't want to dance with her, and you were like, "I'd rather dance with anyone but you."
Yeah,
but
I mean,
it's
Chris,
like you don't know what you got till it's gone.
If you don't know who Jackie Lee is by now. This is going to come back to haunt me someday down the road, you know, when people are like,
probably anyways. In a good way though.
Yeah.
A good haunting.
Chris, your books, cause so here's the deal. When you reached out to us and you said, hey, you know, I got these books too to promote. I thought, you know what? This is really cool. Like, and there's a lot of 80s books out there. There's a lot of books about 80s history, pop culture, yada, yada, yada. But you kind of took it, you twisted it a little bit and made it more practical for everyday living, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I knew two things really well, 80s pop culture and the business world. I'd been in corporate marketing for 20 plus years. I grew up in the 80s. I love the 80s. I still love the 80s. I don't have the fashion or the haircuts from the 80s, which is a very good thing, but I still love the music and I love the movies.
Arguably.
And the television. Yeah. I mean, I had a rat tail. I had a mohawk. I did it all. Yeah, I did it all. It's really, really bad. Parachute pants, members only jackets, the whole nine yards. I still have my Vans though. I still wear Vans. I love Vans. I think Vans are one of the greatest brands. But I put the two together. I was actually at home one day and I was watching The Breakfast Club and I was kind of having a self-pity party of one. My job wasn't going real well. And Bender says screws fall out all the time. The world's an imperfect place. And I kind of sat up and I thought, man, I'm in my imperfect place. What am I going to do to put my screws back in, the proverbial screws back in? And I thought about it in the context of the workplace. And I just put this article out on LinkedIn, What the Breakfast Club Teaches Us About the Workplace. And people responded. The next day I got up and there are all these comments and likes. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. And so I wrote one on Ferris Bueller and work-life balance, and I kind of went from there. There was a great movie, The Outsiders, and Johnny Cade, one of the characters, said, "You still have a lot of time to make yourself be what you want." And I was 47 at the time, and I really took that quote to heart, that you still have a lot of time to make yourself be what you want. And I realized really cool. I do still have a lot of time.
Yeah.
Everybody does. So it's never too late to chase that dream, to chase that passion, and to go for it. And so I wrote this book and I self-published it. I tell everybody, the first one's about 85 pages. So depending on your time you spend in the bathroom, let's call it 4 trips to the bathroom and you can be done with the book.
Oh, God. It's a one for me. Someone spends a lot of time in the bathroom.
Yeah. You know, your feet start tingling, that kind of
yeah. for a while. The deep vein thrombosis sets in.
Yeah. So 4 to 5 times to the bathroom, you should be good. And then the second one, I actually, when I wrote that one, I got a small publisher for it. And that one is more meaningful to me in terms of the content because it's about 220 pages. So it's a real quote unquote book. And it has, each one has 10 movies and the lessons that we can learn from them.
Cool.
While I was doing the second book, I built a website and positioned myself as a speaker as well. And I started speaking using my vacation days from my job as a head of marketing at a global company. I started using my vacation days to speak at conferences. And then the two started coming together and I thought, I have to make a decision here. And at the end of June, I left the corporate world with 2 books under my belt and speaking opportunities, speaking gigs.
So you had your first book come out and then obviously you put out your second one and you've got some pretty rad endorsements too along the way, right? Like Diane Franklin, who's a personal friend of the show.
Yeah, Diane wrote the foreword, which was just so cool because she's so cool and she's so down to earth. I mean,
she is.
For me, you know, I was, I think 16, I think when Better Off Dead came out. So for me to actually be having these interactions with Monique from Better Off Dead, my 16-year-old self would just have been like, wow, this is amazing.
This episode of our $2 late fee is the beginning of our month of 3 o'clock high. And we have an interview on the next episode with Jim Walker, who wrote and performed the song, the opening song to the movie, and his connection to like random people that Dustin and I have either interviewed or discussed.
Yeah, and Diane is a great example. You know,
yeah.
Being able to, you know, you guys had her on an episode. She wrote the foreword for my book. I mean, that's just, yeah, it's very cool. And it's awesome to be part of it. You guys do a phenomenal job. I love listening to the podcast. I'm really excited to be on here.
Thanks.
Because we've been corresponding for so long that I feel like, you know, it's too bad we don't live in the same cul-de-sac. Because I think we'd be hanging out 6 feet away from each other right now. But
yeah, right. You know? Well, 3 o'clock high, Dustin and I just rewatched it with our wives the other night, and both were saying like, damn, this movie still holds up.
Totally.
So let's kind of get into it. Let's get into 3 o'clock high, yeah. Break it down, get your thoughts on it, our personal thoughts. Like, I remember seeing this when I was a kid and just being so drawn to it and thinking like, why do I love this movie so much? And I used to say, every time I would describe it to people, I'd say, this is not your typical high school movie. This is like, it's the style, the direction, the cinematography, the music, everything just felt different to me. Like, what do you guys think?
What's it about?
How would you describe it?
Hasn't seen it, what's it about?
Yeah.
Well, for anybody who hasn't seen it, it's a story about this guy named Jerry Mitchell, who is kind of your everyday high school kid who gets up one morning, realizes that today is going to be one of those days, and goes to school. He works at the student store, and kind of he's got like this cocky air about him. But then as the day goes on, he's asked to interview the new kid at school, Buddy Revelle, who has been labeled the bully and labeled the troubled kid. And I'll let you guys describe it a little bit more, but he goes to interview the kid. Buddy doesn't like to be touched. He touches Buddy. Buddy wants to have a fight with him. And from that point forward, he has to find a way to get out of this fight that's scheduled for 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Hence the title, 3 o'clock High. And hilarity ensues.
Yeah, it's a dark comedy. I think you kind of label it as like a dark comedy, but it does really hold up. You mentioned earlier you watched it, you know, for the first time in a while with your wives. And I rewatched it about a week and a half ago, and I realized how much it really does hold up. And there's a lot of lessons in it that we're going to get to as we talk about the movie, I'm sure. But he, you know, here's this kid who works in the school supply store. And for those who are listening that went to high school post, let's call it mid 90s, there probably wasn't, you probably didn't have a school supply store. But back in the day, you could go there in the mornings and get your pencils, your erasers, your notebook, whatever stuff you needed that you didn't have, the cool alien eraser things that you put on top of your pencils. You could get that kind of stuff there at the school store.
You know, Zach was talking about Buddy Revell and sort of he's the new kid, he's the new bully, but his reputation has fully preceded him to these like epic levels where every student at school is whispering and the movie kind of starts with every student is basically passing, you know, the story and it's getting increasingly scary about, you know, I heard Buddy like, you know, not that he killed a guy, but he like broke this guy's face and he did this. And the camera is doing this extra long shot, just going from student to student to student. I love that. It's just like, it just goes and
so
then,
beautiful.
And then, you know, you see these various cameos, Yardley Smith, Lisa Simpson is just, you know, gives a line and then she passes it on. And then, you know, within maybe, you know, 5 minutes, you know that this Buddy Revell character is like somebody that you don't want to mess with and you don't want to piss off and you certainly don't want to touch him. So we know that as an audience, like before we even see Buddy.
Buddy Revell is, I think, the best bully, one of the best bullies ever, if not the best bully ever. And I'm going to get
totally
into
agree.
That. But that opening scene where they show him after everybody's been talking about him, kind of Ferris Bueller style, like, you know, when Ferris was sick and somebody saw him at 31 Flavors and he was dying, you know, stuff. Same type of thing. I just, when they show him, the first time they show him, you just think, man, that's a kid that we all had in every high school that you just, everybody went to the other side of the hallway when they saw him.
Yep.
Yeah. Mine was Jerome Shaw. Jerome Shaw was the kid at school who, if you said to him, hey, Jerome, I think Alex Risenborough wants to fight you, he'd walk and just to set up Alex, he'd walk over to Alex and go, okay, meet me at the back of 7-Eleven. I'm going to kick your ass. And Alex is like, well, I don't want to fight you. And he's like, no, we're going to fight. And, you know, the kid who would just do violent shit. And at the time, that was the one you're like, oh, he's a badass. Oh, look out for that guy. And I think at the time when I first saw 3 o'clock High, I said the same thing. I'm like, oh, Buddy Revell is, he's a badass. And like, he didn't take no shit. And then now watching it recently, I'm like, this kid clearly was being abused at home to some degree. He's always wearing the same, well, it's all in one day, but you see him the next day, he's still wearing the same outfit. You know, looking all disheveled, and I have a lot of sympathy for him. And I think, you know, to reference on another 80s movie, Manhunter, when William Peterson's character is talking about, you know, the murderer, the serial killer, and he's like, as a boy, I have so much sympathy for him, but as an adult, I want to, you know, blow him out of his socks or something like that. It's the same idea, like as a, not blowing, you know, killing.
Blow him out of his socks?
I think that's the line. I want to blow him out of his socks. I think that's the line.
Blow me where the Pampers is.
Can you? But yeah, no, as a kid, like, I feel like what happened to Buddy? You know, he's super complex.
I was just going to say to the point about Buddy Revell being a sympathetic character that Jerry basically agitates him in the bathroom. Like, he's just taking a piss. And then Jerry's like, hey, I want to interview you. While you're taking a leak, and now I'm gonna touch you, and like, you're like, oh, yeah, you fucked up, Jerry. Like, you don't do that.
Yeah.
And that seems very obvious watching it now, you know, as opposed to just like, why does this guy have it out for him? It's just like there's these unwritten rules of like, well, you touched me, so now we're gonna fight. And yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. I'm gonna get you under your bed. I guess we can probably play that clip.
You made me mad, Jerry. Now I'm gonna have to do something to work it off.
Work it off?
You and me, we're gonna have a fight. Today, after school. 3 o'clock, in the parking lot. You try and run, I'm gonna track you down. You go to a teacher, it's only gonna get worse. You sneak home, I'm gonna be under your bed. You and me.
makes him larger than like kind of a science fiction bully in a way. And even to the point where, you know, it's like Jerry is trying to escape and he can't because Buddy has disabled his car. Somehow he knew what car Jerry drove and, you know. So I love that tone where it's like the movie stays in reality, but it also takes some liberties as far as exaggerating things.
Well, I think he was able to spot his car because what did the license plate say? Like Supermom or something like that? So, a lot of that opening scene was lifted from his life, right? And that he went back and reshot, which I thought was really interesting. And he said he was like, I was the awkward kid in school. I mean, I think that's probably why I related in a weird way. Like, my brother was full of anger, and I was always trying to calm him down and avoid kind of confrontations. And so I looked at both characters, and I was like, I can see a little bit of myself in all of these people.
Yeah, totally. It's kind of like The Breakfast Club, I think, when you know, we see those five characters, but there's a little bit of each of those characters in all of us, too.
Well, and this movie, like, originally, apparently... Corey Feldman was considered for the lead in this film, which I cannot see for the life of me. I can't unsee Casey Shamosko at all.
It would have been so hammy.
I think it would have totally changed the tone.
Yeah.
Right. But just to run down the cast, Casey Shamosko plays Jerry Mitchell. And if you don't know who Casey Shamosko is, I remember him fondly from Young Guns specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is it pronounced Shamosko or Shamashko? I believe it is Shamashko. I did just verify.
It is Shamashko. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Shamashko.
According to a couple of places.
I apologize. Shamashko.
Shamashko.
Shamashko. Yeah, and...
It's Shamashko. Rolls off the tongue. I think it may
Richard
be.
Tyson plays Buddy Revell, and I love... Richard Tyson, fun fact, I lived... My first place in Santa Monica... was near a bar called JP's, and Richard Tyson used to hang out there all the time. And he would get people, if people recognize him, they say, oh, are you that guy from Something About Mary or Kindergarten Cop? And because a lot of people hadn't seen 3 o'clock High. And he'd say, yeah, do me a favor, touch me. And then he'd say, I don't like people touching me. Now you got to buy me a shot. So
works.
Yeah. Right.
He was also in Black Hawk Down. As well.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, he had a great role in that.
Yes.
Yeah. I love Richard Tyson. And he was on one of my favorite 80s cop shows called Hardball, which very underrated. It only lasted for like 6 episodes or something. You've got Jeffrey Tambor, who plays the owner or manager of the school store. I guess he's the owner of the school store.
He's a teacher that's responsible for it.
Yeah. I mean, that would imply that the school store is separate from the school.
Yeah.
Right.
And I didn't have a school store growing up, so I'm assuming, you know, like, yeah, it's run by the school. And
well, if you're interested in starting a school store business, I'd advise not to.
Right. Yeah. Not at this time.
No.
And then Philip Baker Hall is the detective in the movie. I mean, Philip Baker Hall kind of plays the same character in all his films. I mean, I loved him in Boogie Nights. That's where I specifically identified him now. Obviously back then I didn't. And then John P. Ryan plays Mr. O'Rourke, who's the principal of the school. And I'm watching and I'm going, holy shit, he's in Best of the Best. I love Best of the Best. John P. Ryan's in that. And there's a little connection there. And, you know, and then to round out, Mitch Pileggi plays the Duker, who's the head of security.
He's so great.
He's so great. And then, Annie Ryan plays Franny, who's kind of like Jerry's buddy who wants to bond with him. We'll talk about that in a second. And then Stacey Glick plays Bree, his little sister. And then Jonathan Wise plays Vincent, who kind of, do you think Vincent was the responsible for getting Jerry involved in all of this?
Seems like it. Vincent is the... What is he? The editor
of the
paper?
Newspaper.
Editor-in-chief of the school newspaper who assigns Jerry the assignment of interviewing Buddy. And then, you know, should probably lead with, like, don't touch him. Whatever you do, don't touch him. Then he touches him.
He didn't do enough research, right?
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things. He wasn't intending to see Buddy in the bathroom. He was just going to the bathroom. There's a lot. He's in the bathroom a lot, is what we noticed. There's a lot of yeah. scenes in the bathroom. Like anytime there's like some stress, it's like, oh, I gotta go to the bathroom. And that's where, you know, all pivotal scenes happen in the bathroom.
Yeah. So like I said, he could have read my first book during the movie because he was in the bathroom. So
Right. He would have, 85 pages he would have easily covered.
Easily.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
There was a guy in the cast, his name, the guy who wore the red beret, his name was Theron Reed.
Yeah.
But he was so good. And I looked for other movies that he was in, and there just really wasn't like this climb that you would anticipate, because he had very few scenes, but each scene he was in, he owned it, I felt like.
I mean, every character in this movie has a really fun moment where they all kind of stand out and you go, I mean, they're so well crafted. Maybe it was my wife. She said, you know, do you remember your security guard? And I said, yeah, actually, he became the bailiff on Judge Judy. So believe it or not.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's quite a step up in pay scale for a guy who was in Cupertino, California back in the day. So, but then, we got to talk about the three. So obviously the three women in his life, Franny being the one who wants to bond with Jerry. But then there's his teacher.
Mrs. Farmer.
Yeah, Mrs. Farmer. and then Karen. She's always popping up in every scene, like just kind of clueless to what's going on, not even caring to what's going on around her, but it's all about her.
Yeah, she's the pretty girl. She's the one that, you know, he can't even count change around because he gets so nervous.
And I used to ask girls when I would, maybe this is the reason why I had such a hard time dating. I'd say, do you write in bed? Because the whole line of where he wants to give her a pen and he's like, you can even write upside down in bed. And she's like, I don't write in bed. So I'd be like, hey.
And so you would just ask girls if they write in bed?
No, that would be my second line. I'd be like, hi, how are you? And do you write in bed?
Yeah, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing the issue.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I'm seeing the problem.
The next was a couple skate. After that.
Because yeah, what if they said yes, you'd try and sell them a pen you didn't have?
No, I'd be like, did you want to write together? Draw in bed?
Oh my God.
Do you want to go?
Oh, wow.
Go with me?
I would do from Better Off Dead. I'd be like, I skate, you skate, we skate. Maybe we can get together and be a skating team. But none of us were on skates. So that didn't work out either. I was like, so I see the problem there too.
That's a much more effective pickup line, in my opinion. But
do you write in bed? Yeah,
I don't write in bed.
Yeah, I don't. I think
just
if you're
doing a survey,
if you're choosing pickup lines from 3 o'clock High, that was probably one of the main issues.
And this movie bombed when it came out, and like I said in the opening, it's a cult film. It's definitely gotten a resurgence over the past few years, but I would reference this movie all the time. And like you said in your books, like you talk about Ferris Bueller or you talk about 16 Candles or Breakfast Club, those are the teen movies that people knew about. They were the most popular at the time and still are. But I'd say 3 o'clock High, and they're like, you're a nerd, just go away. Come on.
Well, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that Steven Spielberg, like Phantom produced this essentially, or, you know, ultimately his name was not on it.
That's a fun fact that
more to that, but nobody knows that really.
No,
I didn't know that. Wow.
No. So,
you won't see his name anywhere on this movie.
No, you won't because Aaron Spelling owned the rights to the screenplay and Aaron Spelling was going to give it to Universal only if let Amblin take it only if they didn't put Amblin and Steven Spielberg's name on it, because he thought it was going to be this big hit and he wanted to claim all the glory, essentially.
Fascinating.
That, yep. According to Phil. It doesn't surprise me that Aaron Spelling would, you know, want to take full control of that. But Steven Spielberg was a part of it the entire time. And apparently, after he saw the original cut, he's like, wait, what happened to the movie? You made a Martin Scorsese film. And Phil Juano is like, yeah, I wanted to make my version of After Hours set in a high school. Which when I first heard that, I was like, whoa, it makes total sense, because that's my personal favorite of Scorsese's work as well. And it looks, yeah, if you look at the two movies, they are very, just the way that the cinematography is really similar.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, that makes total sense. Rewatching it this time. Everything from like the kind of like the sped up footage on the long like crane shots and the editing wise, it's really like an homage. And I think Spielberg was expecting Karate Kid. Is that right?
Yeah. What happened to Karate Kid? You made a Scorsese film. Yeah. Why do I sound like this? I have no idea.
As far as the life lessons, I mean, let's just break down the quick bullet points of the movie in the sense that once Jerry is challenged to a fight at 3 o'clock, he is trying to go through all the various ways that he can get out of that fight, which include, you know, hiring somebody to take Buddy out, planning, planning something in Buddy's locker, running away, and all these things.
Robbing the school store.
Robbing the school store to then, you know, hire the guy, but then ultimately try and pay off Buddy and all these things. And he hits this moment where he's, you know, the whole thing is like, I don't want to fight. I want to get out of the fight. Eventually he says, Buddy, I got, you know, $350. You just take it and the fight's over. And Buddy's like, you are such a pussy. Like, he takes the money and it's just like,
I love that scene.
You didn't even try. And at that point, the entire movie, like, something just shifts. And the whole goal that Jerry's been going towards of getting out of the fight, he's achieved that goal, but now he's just realized at what cost. Like, he has no integrity, he has no pride, and like, sure, he'll be safe, and he kind of realizes, but, you know, Buddy's right. Like, I should fight him. And that's when things get really interesting.
Yeah, he says, you didn't even try. How does that make you feel? And you know what's really interesting, when you go back to, he hires the toughest guy in the school. So Vincent, his friend, says, I've got a plan. And he pulls a fire alarm so that everybody's outside of the school, so that Jerry can go find the tough guy in the school and pay him the money he's stolen from breaking into the school store, pay him that money to get him out of the fight. And the guy says, yeah, I played football against him. Or I think he says, I'll fight him. No big deal. Don't worry. It'll be handled.
Guaranteed.
You know, when he walks, guaranteed. You know, when he walks into the library and Buddy's sitting there at the desk, do you know what Buddy's reading?
Yeah.
Of Mice and Men.
Of Mice and Men.
So really great. Interesting choice, yeah. Right?
Yep.
And so, of course, you know, the whole thing unfolds and the tough kid from the school is nowhere near as tough as Buddy Ravel. It's that whole build up to the fight, I think, is just phenomenal. And when they keep flashing to the clock, that's one of my favorite parts of the movie. So it seems trivial and small and little, but just the tick, tick, tick of the clock. And every time we see it, he's getting closer and closer and closer to having to make this decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, just the continuity and consistency of this whole movie, it's so tight. And it's so, especially for not a first time director, but a first time feature film director, you really go, whoa, this guy is super freaking talented. Because I don't care if he's borrowing scenes from, After Hours or not, like, what he crafted is really
everybody
solid.
Borrows everything. I mean, yeah,
totally.
I totally agree.
And I think you mentioned the switchblade in the locker, which was his friend Vincent's idea.
Yes.
With the note. And of course, Buddy, as he is the entire movie, is one step ahead of them. And yeah. he finds the note with the switchblade in his car. It says there is no escape. And and that's when the Duker finds the Duker, the security guard.
The Duker
says there's no escaping the Duker. When he finds Jerry with the what do they call it? The concealed weapon. So he just, every time he tries to get out of it, it just makes it worse. Until the point where he finally is going to pay off Buddy, and Buddy takes the money, but says basically like, you didn't even try. And there's a great lesson in there, obviously, about in life.
I love that he throws that out there, and clearly like the term pussy back in the day was thrown around. Like that was, you would never say that now, obviously, but that was such a, like,
well,
that was
when the you lowest say, of the but low. What do you mean though? Because you don't think kids in high school are saying that to each other?
I don't know if they're saying it. I mean, I
bet you they are.
They are for sure.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess
absolutely.
Maybe.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it's like we wouldn't say it now because we're not 18.
Right. You know, yeah. And they may be saying like things like poussoir.
Well, that was the lowest of the low back then, though. If you called someone, you know, called someone that, you were like, oh man, I got nothing going on for me. And I just love that he gets that courage up. But of course, what makes it even better is after he punches the locker door and he goes around the corner, after he confronts Buddy, punches the locker and goes around the corner, he's like holding, shaking his hand and
fights back on, asshole.
Yeah.
This movie and the continuity too is so good. Like in the film, when Buddy confronts Jerry in the bathroom and slams him against the bathroom mirror, you know, says we're gonna have this fight. He grabs his sweater, and then when Jerry leaves the bathroom and goes back to class, he's still got the sweater scrunched up where Buddy had grabbed him.
Yeah, and I mean, yep. And that's that scene. My favorite part of that entire scene is the kid who is in the bathroom stall, and we just see his feet, and then he's tapping his feet, and then when he realizes Buddy Revell's out there, he stops tapping his feet. Yeah, and then his buddy basically says, I'm going to destroy you. The kid's feet start going up on top of the toilet
creeping
lid.
Up. Yep.
Yeah, it's so smart. But before we kind of get into the soundtrack a little bit, and then we talk about what was going on in 1987, let's talk about some of the life lessons you sure. observed, Chris.
Yeah. And before, just really quickly, before we do that, there's one line from the movie. I've got to put a plug in for my stepbrother here because he's a movie guy like us, but he likes the movies like 3 o'clock. I mean, he loves the bigger movies that everybody knows, but we're always quoting movies that other people, unless you really know movies, you miss it. And 3 o'clock High was one of them. And so one of the things that he said is whenever he met new guys that he was going to hang out with, you know, friends growing up, and they were in their 30s or whatever, and he'd meet somebody and they'd all start talking. He would, if something was going on where the line made sense, he would throw out the line, "Don't fuck this up, Mitchell." And if somebody in the group knew it, they're like, "Dude, 3 o'clock High." He's like, "That's the guy I want to hang out with."
Yeah.
So it's a great line.
Don't fuck this up, Mitchell.
It can be used in so many ways, and I think I probably use it 3 or 4 times a month. I think it's an important line for Jerry because at that point, at that moment, that's the realization for Jerry that he is, as a, you know, kind of the Star Wars thing, he is the only hope. Even the principal doesn't know what to do. And the Duker is knocked out. So the tough security guard is done. And the principal is telling him this. Basically, as you, Obi-Wan, you are, you know, this is it. Like, you are our last hope. And it's really interesting that I think that's the point where Jerry really wakes up and realizes, I've got to do something here.
Well, no, but you're right.
Kill him, Jerry!
Don't fuck this up, Mitchell!
No one's gonna help you now, Jerry. It's just you and me.
You're right, because as a high schooler, right, Jerry is always looking to the teachers and the principal as the authority and the safety. And we're at a point at the end where Buddy Revell has taken away that element entirely, where he's knocked out everybody.
Yeah.
So it really just is. Like, it is Jerry and whatever he's going to utilize to get out of the situation. at that point.
Yep. And yeah, he's the last hope. So when you talked about the lessons for life and for the workplace, one of the ones that really stuck out to me is more for leaders, people who lead a team. And if you've been in the corporate world before, or you're in the business world now, what we all know, and even if you haven't been, you probably have heard, well, you know, people get laid off or fired on Friday at 5 o'clock, or there's a tough discussion that needs to be had and you need to be in my office at 5. They don't say it that way, but if you have a meeting with your boss at 5 o'clock at the end of the day, you know, more likely this is probably not going to be the best discussion. And what this teaches us, what this teaches leaders, is if you have to deliver bad news, don't do it at the end of the day. If you've got to have a tough discussion, don't do it at the end of the day. Do it in the first thing in the morning when everybody can have a conversation about it. And I think there's always the fear, well, how is somebody going to take it? But the reality is it makes it so much worse for the person who's that news is being delivered to, because they know something's happening. It may not mean they're losing their job, but it maybe they just didn't do something well on a project. Yeah. And you wait until the end of the day. This movie teaches us a really valuable lesson for leaders about have that conversation early so that everyone can have a discussion about it. Because if you have it at the end of the day, then for the team member, they're Jerry Mitchell. The entire day, they're thinking about this. They're not going to be productive. I mean, look at Jerry. He broke and robbed the school store that he, you know, pledged allegiance to, essentially. Yeah. He disappointed his teacher manager, who was looked to be one of his very good friends, who couldn't believe that somebody would do this. And then the entire day, he didn't study. He didn't have success in class, minus, you know, making out with Mrs. Farmer in front of the entire class for his book report. He didn't have the greatest day. And all of it was because 3 o'clock was the time that was set. And he had 7 hours to try to get out of it and think about it. And if you, as a leader, if you don't think that that's what you're doing to your team member when you set these meetings at the end of the day, you're not listening, because it's exactly what you're doing. And that employee, if they're important to you, realize what you're doing to them, the emotional impact you're having on them. And by the way, they're not going to be productive that day because they're just waiting for this moment.
I think it's a life lesson in general, though, because I reflect back to like when I was a kid and I was living in Michigan and I flew out. My parents divorced and I moved out to California in 84. And I go back to visit my dad in the winters and summers. And when we land, we're so excited to see my dad and hug my dad. And we'd be in the car and we get to the house and he'd say, why don't you guys unpack, give yourselves a minute, and then meet me upstairs in the kitchen. And we always knew that that was when he was going to give us this lecture, you know, and it's like, why couldn't you just tell us this in the car ride when we were on the, you know, just get it out of the way, Dad, come on.
Exactly. Same with your kids, you know, wait till, I mean, for me back in, you know, the 80s, wait till your dad gets home type of thing.
Yeah.
And so you're just going to be a non-productive person, whether you're a child or you're somebody who's part of a team.
Totally.
Or you're an executive below an executive, whatever it is, you're just not going to be productive. And you may try to find ways to get out of that meeting that are going to make everything worse for you. And as the employee or as the kid, the best thing that you can do is just prepare to face it. Prepare to face it and accept it and create whatever it is. With Jerry, for example, you know, he tried everything he could to get out of it till he couldn't get out of it.
His whole day started off pretty wonky. And Jim Walker provided the song, the opening soundtrack song to the movie. That song perfectly captures that moment so well. And I love that he starts the movie with that song, ends the movie with that song. I mean, there's so many great lines in the song itself. Dustin and I bonded over that song. And I think, Dustin, you texted me one day and you're like, this song stuck in my head. And from that text, that's when I reached out to Jim Walker and I'm like, hey, would you mind if we use your song for the movie or for the podcast? He's like, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's how it happened?
Yeah. No, you were the catalyst. I'm not even joking.
How funny.
Yeah.
You didn't tell me that. Damn it.
If we timestamp.
If I'd known that, my life would be better. Oh, well.
Well, hopefully.
No, it's good.
It will from this.
That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. No, because that song is, you know, always in my head. Now it's really always in my head. And in fact, whatever I was editing yesterday using that song, my wife now wants to divorce me because it's so repetitive and I wasn't using headphones. So,
I love this line in the song where Jim sings. And actually, if you go on his Bandcamp site. It's JVAMusic1.bandcamp. He's got
that's
the track
complicated.
On
just go to JVAMusic.com.
Yeah, just go to that. Never mind.
Go to JVAMusic1.bandcamp/JimMusic. I mean, it wasn't that complicated, but just, yeah.
Just JVA just Music. Go to JVAMusic.com. And if you go on his site, he's got the song. You can buy the song from him on there. But he's got the lyrics on there too. And the lyrics are like, you can duck, hide, scramble into the street, and then fall over your own feet, whine, beg, scream, somebody please, live your life on your knees. All these things come true, some of your nightmares too. Now what you gonna do? Something to remember me by. And I think it's so perfect. It's like he scrambles through the whole movie trying to get out of this situation. And like, how do you want to be remembered though, dude? Do you want to be remembered as the kid who chickened out and tried to pay everybody off? Or do you want to be the guy who, you know, saved the day at the end and, or not, you know, but like stood up to your demons. Like, and I love
that.
Well,
right. And it's just like, it doesn't matter what you do, the fight's coming. So
yeah, it's going to come. The inevitability's there. So.
And when you say, when he says the line about, you know, something to remember me by, you could take that as Jerry, something to remember, the student body is going to remember Jerry for, or it could be Buddy Revelle speaking to Jerry. There is a I can never say that word, so I'm going to skip it. And
what word were you going to say? Now I got to know.
Well, I can spell it for you and maybe you can say it.
Okay, spell it.
P-O-I-G-N-A-N-T.
Poignant.
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 For $200.
Yeah, see?
It is poignant.
I could spell it, I couldn't say it. So there you go.
Poignant. Poignant.
Yeah. So, yeah, that awesome. Word. There's this cool moment at the end. And
yes, I agree.
And so, yeah, that line could be Buddy delivering it to Jerry.
As we're getting towards the end of our episode, let's talk about what was happening in 1987 as well. By the way, before I say that, coming up following this episode in 2 weeks will be our interview with Jim Walker himself, the voice behind Something to Remember Me By. It's a great interview, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. He tells some fun stories about the movie, what his whole career, and a really solid, awesome dude. So check that interview out in 2 weeks. But 1987 is when the movie came out. It was a pretty big year, pop culture-wise. The Simpsons premiered in 1987.
On the Tracy Ullman show or the actual Simpsons?
The actual show. The actual show, okay. The Simpsons, because the Fox network premiered in 1987 as well. Prozac made its debut in 1987 for all those fans of Prozac out there. And Beverly Hills Cop Part 2 was the top grossing movie.
If you ever do an episode on a 1987 movie that is one of my all-time favorites that I will watch, it would be The Lost Boys.
If you want to talk about a movie and a soundtrack and everything just being iconic, that definitely takes the cake.
Yep.
It actually wasn't as popular as I remember it being when I was kind of going down a list of top movies.
And Jamie Gertz. Jeez, I mean, Jamie Gertz. Wow. Definitely a fan.
Some of the top songs back in 87 were Los Lobos La Bamba, which is another great movie, by the way. Mm-hmm. And that actually was a big deal because that song was so popular, but it wasn't really common for like a non-English song to be in the top 10 for during that time, I guess. What do you think? I mean, in the U.S. anyways, right? In the U.S.
I guess I'm just laughing because that just kind of stalled out in a funny way.
Yeah, it did. Sorry.
Like, no apologies. It's just
And one of my favorite albums of that year, and we will talk about it at some point very soon, was Bruce Hornsby and The Range. His debut album came out that year, and Mandolin Rain was his big single from that album. Oh. Fun fact, Huey Lewis produced that album. So there you go.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, wow.
Chris, thank you. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. I really appreciate you guys giving me the megaphone. This is really fantastic.
And if people want to order your book and find you, they can go to chriscluse.com.
Yeah, chriscluse.com, chriscluse.com. And on social media, you can find me on Facebook at Chris Clues, LinkedIn Chris Clues, and then Twitter, I was actually lucky enough to get at 80s Pop Culture. I could not believe that was available.
Nice.
At 80s Pop Culture. I appreciate it again, guys. It's been awesome. We always remember there's no escape from the Duker.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a
Is it 5-star rating?
Don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. If you listen to us on Spotify, that's great too. And you can find us on the internet. Don't forget to check out our website at $2LateFee.com and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at $2LateFeePodcast. We'll see you next time.
We did it.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.